This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, everybody. My name is Garnet Lee. We have an excellent show for you today. And as you know, it takes four of us. I can't just bring the awesome by myself. It takes four of us to bring the awesome to this show. Including Mr.
You bring all the awesome. We just clean up your scraps.
I bring some nifty.
Bringing the awesome. Bringing the awesome today with me is Mr. Jeff Cannata.
How you always. Doing? You can follow me, Jeff Cannata, on Twitter.
You're just really
nervous. 2X1T. There you go.
I love it. You came through. Love it. And the other Jeff, of course, Indie Jeff Mattis at the end of the table.
Howdy, everybody.
And our first time joining us today is our guest, Mike Schramm of the official Apple weblog, joystick, improv comedian, actor.
That's right.
And he has a better radio voice than I do.
Well, thank you very much. I brought as much awesome as I could find, but it's just a little box over there in the corner. Oh. I don't know.
I left all my awesome in my other pants.
Ooh.
I do that sometimes.
Don't go in the laundry with those. That's trouble. You get awesome all over the place.
Yeah, all your shirts are colored awesome. It's terrible.
Enough comedy jokes. Before we get rolling, because we have a whole hell of a lot to get to today, a couple of things I wanted to throw out there real quickly. Basically, folks, there is a week left for you to support Republic's Kickstarter. And I don't care if you haven't done Kickstarters before. I mean, you probably already know about this because Ryan Payton was on the show and Billy's a friend of the show. And you probably have heard about it. These guys have a very ambitious plan for their iOS and now PC and Mac game.
They need your help.
They're at about $200,000. They want $500,000. That means they got a long way to go, but they have about a week left. So, yes, even $10 helps tremendously.
I think this is your chance to prove to the world that high-end AAA iOS type games are viable.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we don't just need
AAA iOS games out there. And they just announced today, Republic David Hayter,
yes,
and Jennifer Hale are both going to do voice acting for the game.
So, for the love of God, if you haven't visited the Kickstarter page, please just at least visit it, check it out, get a little bit more info on it.
If nothing else, you can see what Jennifer Hale actually looks like, which no one usually knows, because she's literally done voice acting for every game out there, every single game.
It's weird to me, though, because she did Female Shepherd so much in her voice, just seems to be like her normal voice, that now I hear her being interviewed for other stuff, and it's like, oh, damn it, it's female, it's my shepherd! Why are they talking to my shepherd?
Well, Republic gets her favorite game on the Citadel. Yes. All right, now that's all I got.
So there you go. As a matter of fact, I checked right before. If you just Google up Republic Kickstarter, it pops right to the top. These guys are working very hard on it, and we're behind it. So, yeah, that's it.
Give it a look.
It's a little weird saying that, but I think these guys are onto something, and I want you guys to, if you're into it, support it. Also, I would love it if you'd watch Shaq News Daily.
Yeah.
I would love that. It's 3 minutes. If you want to catch up on what's going on during the day, you have the YouTubes. Watch the video show. 3 minutes. Ryan's cutting it, and he's doing an awesome job. It'll catch you up on whatever you need to, like, whatever you want to know. Whatever you think might be interesting about video games, whatever might be interesting about video games that day, if you spend 3 minutes, you'll know it and be the smartest person in your circle about video games.
It'll perfectly prepare you to watch the Totally Rad Show next.
Yes. Absolutely. All right, so moving on, we have all kinds of stuff to get to today. We are going to talk about things like and including Jeff squealing over the Elder Scrolls MMO. Is he smiling?
Squealing? Prepare.
Don't worry, we're going to do that first. So if you just give me 20 seconds, I will bust out the rest of the like benchmarks, and then we'll come right to that, okay?
Yes.
All right, you cool with that?
But do it like a pig, boy. That squealing.
What the? I have no idea what's happening, folks. I've lost control. What else? We're going to talk about EA's weird snafu with Rock Band on the iOS platform, which was, just a mistake. Honest mistake, folks. They didn't mean to totally, they were going to turn off the servers. And then, when you said, oh my God, you can't do that, turn it back on. We're going to talk about Black Ops 2 because I was over at Treyarch and saw it. We're going to hit a little bit of the other news stories. And, of course, Jeff checked out God of War Ascension, which does have multiplayer, which Jeff Kanata never saw coming. He had no idea it was going to happen. It's like, holy shit, they're going to put multiplayer in God of War? That is revolutionary.
Mm-hmm. That kind of insight. Into how that's these games are
that's
planned
what I bring
and,
to the
and
show.
Put together.
That's what I bring.
I just wanted to make sure you didn't try to, like, you know, come back when we talk about it and claim that you knew about it ahead of time.
I didn't say it. That's the whole point, is that I didn't know about it ahead of time.
But right, exactly.
I'm the only one who said that would be cool to put in the game.
You're the only one in all of Twitter, in all of the forums online.
I'm saying on this show.
Oh, okay.
It was totally
you don't have to
idea.
Troll me. Mike rolls in here. We meet 2 minutes ago, and he starts trolling
me. I apologize. I'm very impressed by your prediction that God of War would someday go multiplayer.
I didn't say it would go. I said what would be cool in Ascension would be,
no,
whatever.
You know, I think Mike is already
I get
won.
Made fun of for the shit that I talk about, and then like 2 weeks later it gets announced. And then everybody's like, oh, well, that was cool. And it's like, well, where was that when I was, like, watch. Today, Mattis is going to start talking about Risen 2, and nobody's going to remember about how Jeff at GDC was talking about how cool Risen 2 was, and everybody was making fun of me. So, no, it's okay. It's all right.
So here we go. You talked about Risen 2?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
And you and Davison. Everybody was making fun of me. Berghammer was on that train.
Pirates are stupid.
No, they can be cool.
Hey, you know what? I never finish any games, so I feel you. Although I finish.
Just because I get excited about stuff. That's what it is.
I can't spoil it. Cynicism. Yet. So, Jeff, we'll wait for you to finish, but I finished Yakuza 4.
Excellent.
And it's awesome.
I'm very much enjoying the ride. It's going to be a little bit. But
is that setting you up to be able to play through Yakuza 3 now?
I don't know. You know, actually, a lot of folks on Twitter have been encouraging me to go back and play 3, but I don't know. Although it evidently has some really cool stuff with the orphanage, and I'm losing you, but that's
the
fine.
The orphanage?
And Kiryu, and there's important stuff there. But I really enjoyed this game, and I can't wait to talk to Jeff about it because it leads up to a very great moment at the end of the fourth act, but then there's this weird, final act that's not the greatest gameplay conclusion, but allows you to go do a lot of stuff in the world, which is kind of cool, and I can't wait to talk to him about that. And that's all.
I'll redouble my efforts.
Yeah, I finished another game this year. I'm finishing games this year.
Wow, it's a whole new year.
Stamp. You. I'm going to stamp that approved. And I'm sure you're stamping approved the idea of an Elder Scrolls MMO, although not everybody in the world is excited about it. So you're excited and squealing.
I'm excited, yes. I suspect and I hope that this doesn't mean we're not going to get more awesome single player.
Separate team.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's a totally different team, so you have nothing to worry about on that front.
So I
they
think this
are
is
entirely
only
separate.
A win-win. I can understand people's apprehension about what is wonderful about that world, and translating that to a world populated by a whole bunch of other people I think is going to be an interesting challenge, but it's such a rich world, and it's full of so many things that I think, you know, obviously directly can be brought into an MMO very easily, because, you know, those games feel like single-player MMOs anyway, and the fact that you can put a whole bunch of people into them. I hope that it doesn't feel like a cookie-cutter of what has become the MMO template. I hope that it's not just WoW with a Elder Scrolls skin. And it certainly
See Star Wars.
Right. Mm. And it certainly doesn't feel like that would be the direction that they would go. If they stay with a possible first-person perspective, I think that could be very fun and very interesting and a fresh kind of feel for MMOs. So that could be really cool, too.
I do want to say, before we get too far, I don't know how everyone must have seen all the trailers and all the screenshots and all the gameplay that came out today, because everyone was passing judgment on this game.
Have you met the internet?
No, I haven't seen any of that stuff. All I saw was like a 3-paragraph press release. And I guess everyone else saw so much other material for this game because everybody decided that they knew exactly what it was all about.
That's how the internet works, man.
So to get to the point Mike's making, there actually was very, very
there's there's almost nothing on this. And I agree with you. Like, I do think that, you know, this is a very unique game and a very unique universe that's definitely found an audience that, you know, you almost wouldn't expect it to find in this day and age, as casual as games get. You know, this is a gigantic game that is a relatively hardcore game, but it's got a huge audience. And so I do hope that they, and I'm a huge MMO fan, I you know, I play World of Warcraft for years and years and years, and I liked Star Wars a lot, even though it was sort of a you know, wow with lightsabers, but I do hope that they take, you know, Bethesda's what they've done with that series and what they brought it up into with Skyrim and really bring that into a massively multiplayer experience, which is where, you know, the ideal is. Not you're in a world that's crowded with people who are running around yelling each other and calling each other noobs, but where you're in this big expansive world and you see someone on a hill next to you and that's another player playing. Like, that's the ideal.
Here. That is absolutely the top concern that came up on Shaq on this story. It's Strider NL right off the bat said fans wanted multiplayer, not an MMO. To which Metal Remains replied, exactly. I wanted to play with my three buddies, not 3 million assholes.
So, yeah, that's a really interesting point, because I think if you had something that felt like Skyrim that played like Borderlands, I think that would be pretty exciting for a lot of people. But it'll be really interesting to see as well. I don't know of any other MMO. I mean, I guess you could say Star Wars a little bit, but I can't think of any other MMO that's based on a place where we are so familiar with the nooks and crannies of that place. Now, they're saying that it's going to be all of Tamriel, right? But I intimately know pockets of Tamriel. I intimately know Skyrim. I intimately know Morrowind. I intimately know, you know, these areas that are established as we're
Does
a
your
thousand...
girlfriend know about all these intimacies you've shared?
Oh, believe me.
I was going to make some joke about you fucking all of Tamriel. But...
He just goes in for the Khajiits. That's it. He's like, he can't.
Hey.
He sees that tail. He's like, oh.
Marrow.
Furries. Obviously it's going to be similar to Star Wars in the sense that they're doing a giant, you know, 1,000 years before or whatever it is. What is it? How many years before?
I think you're speculating from internet rumors.
No, in the press release they said it was going to be a prequel.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
I didn't write that part out.
I don't know if it was exactly 1,000. I don't know what it was. Yeah, something like that. But
so it's a different era.
So you have a
of
chance of being able to have it look and feel different than these games, but these are areas that we know intimately. I keep saying that.
Think that's the thing with Skyrim and all the Elder Scrolls games is that you have a kind of a personal relationship with this world that you're in. And a lot of people actually decried Skyrim for, like, you're the most important person in that world. Well, that's because it's a single player game. So the challenge for ZeniMax Online, not Bethesda, this isn't the same. It's not Todd Howard. It's not the same people that have been working on Skyrim. The challenge for them is going to be to figure out a way to take that feeling of you exploring this world and really going out there and finding cool stuff at every turn, while there's also six other people also finding cool stuff and also doing that all around you in a way that's not, you know, interrupting the gameplay and the exploration that you're undertaking.
I think if we can participate with the rest of the internet in
wild speculation.
what I think would be exciting and interesting and a breath of fresh air for MMOs in general is to just completely jettison pick a class and have it be like an Elder Scrolls game,
right?
Where you just play, and how you play, you put points where you want to put points, and it certainly
isn't
it's
not, that pretty much part and parcel of the Elder Scrolls approach.
Well, it certainly isn't part and parcel to the MMO
approach. No, I know, and so I think that's definitely one piece they have to. You guys, one thing I wanted to ask both of you two, especially, and I'm looking at Mike and Jeff, is that as fans of MMOs and fans of Elder Scrolls, what does that start to look like if you're like, you know, if you're going to your design playbook for this game? What are some of the things that you really need to see to make it feel like Elder Scrolls? Because I am definitely concerned. I could see, you know, I see a picture of we build this, flesh out this big world, we put in the Elder Scrolls leveling and character system, and then I'm off to go find 5 rat pelts.
Yeah. Well, that's a concern, right? I mean, and that's certainly something that is likely. It's not unlikely.
There are rat pelts in Skyrim, though. I mean, there are FedEx quests and rat pelts.
You skin wolves. You skin everything.
Yeah, there's all. I mean, but there are quests like that where they just sort of have to do that. And I'm not saying that won't be there, because I think that is an element of MMOs. I do agree that the class thing is going to be very interesting, because, you know, we can go deep into MMO theory if you like, but the trilogy is the healer, damage, tank. Like, you know, those are the three classes, and the whole point of those is designed to get people to work together. Like,
yes.
That's why you put those in an MMO is so if I'm a tank, I have weaknesses that I need other people to help me pick up on those weaknesses. If you go to a system like Elder Scrolls where anybody can do anything, that is great for the people who want to just stealth around or just do this stuff, but it doesn't incorporate them in the other players that are supposed to be playing with them. So yeah, if you want me to rampantly speculate about this game, I hope that they come up with something where it doesn't redefine what Elder Scrolls has done. It redefines what MMOs are doing, in that it very selectively chooses the people you're playing with and the experience of the world that you're in. Like, maybe there are certain parts of the world where they're all completely instanced, which means you can only have a certain amount of people per part of that area, which means that area is much more open than a city where there's lots more people wandering around. Kind of like Guild Wars has done.
Conan did that as well.
Yeah, So I think ideally, and again, this is all, you know, we haven't seen anything in this game. Like I said, I was joking. There's no screenshots. There's no trailers. There's no gameplay. There's no nothing. But I hope that they sort of play with that line a little bit of what is a single player game, what is an MMO game, and how multiplayer does an MMO need to be a massively.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's something that I've talked about a lot, just with friends. I think that the MMO as a genre is so in need of a fresh take, and it's one of the things that, like, I go on car rides with people and we just start, I love just kind of trying to figure out, how can you break up that holy trinity? How can you make the MMO work?
God, can you imagine being trapped in a car with him?
I think it would be fun, Garnet. How can you make an MMO work without sticking to that? Because I think it's tired. I think it's really tired. And I think that it's in need of, what? Why are you looking at me like that? What?
Are we there yet?
Oh my God.
Well, I think
it's a fun, the reason I brought it up like that is I think it's a fun mental exercise of what can you do to what has become the accepted MMO? I mean, sort of the descendants of EverQuest have, it's become more and more set in stone what you have to have in order to be an MMO. And right, I would love to see somebody come in and explode that. And I think Titan, whatever it is, I hope will be that.
Well, talk about some internet speculation. Now, there's a title about which nothing is known.
No,
I think Titan's going to
be the thing. But it seems stupid for them to come out with another thing that's in competition with their own game. That's why somebody drank their asshole flakes this morning. they're called asshole flakes, and B, you drink them for some reason. I don't know.
I can't say anything that I know or have heard about Titan because none of it has been on the record, but I do want to talk about with you a game that we both, I think, have come to like in the past week or so. I was out of town, so I haven't been able to play too many games, but the one game that's been stealing most of my time since I got back, Tribes Ascend, has just been phenomenal. I've fallen in love with it, and I love the way that they do all the upgrades, the way that they do all the classes in there, and that's a situation. I mean, here's how you solve that problem of the trilogy of classes in MMOs is you don't make the multiplayer dependent on classes, you instead make it dependent on something else. Like maybe you need other people to craft, or you need other people to knock down a generator, or you need them to actually accomplish certain tasks that you can use any class. Like in Tribes. In Tribes, if you're a heavy, you can walk in the base. If you're fast, you can shoot into the base. Yeah. There are multiple ways to accomplish the multiplayer goals that you're trying to accomplish. So I've been a big fan of Tribes, and I think that is how you're going to shake up that class sensibility in MMOs, is you're going to put in other goals that don't depend on
what you're
how
describing
much damage you can do.
Sounds a lot like a exchange of role and role types, but not necessarily so much different, because now you're talking about here the heavy does this, but that's still sort of saying this character fulfills this role, because to get to your point, Mike, that you originally made, is that the reason that they have those mechanisms is because those were the design frameworks that got people to play together. And
Star Wars Galaxies, you know, had a lot of flaws, but tried to do something wildly different. I knew this was.
I never played Galaxies.
It was pre-WoW, and WoW came out and sort of just demolished it, and then they just sort of kept revamping Galaxies and trying to make it more and more like.
Well,
WoW.
They rebooted it entirely one time.
I was gonna say, you talking about pre-NGE or post-NGE? Because pre-NGE was where you
at launch. That I mean, I didn't play.
At launch,
I didn't play tons of.
So you didn't play
Galaxies
after they rebooted it.
No, but I know at launch it. They were really attempting to, you know, you could be a stylist, you could be a dancer, you could those types of things. And I think that's a really admirable goal, and I feel like the whole MMO space has just abandoned it completely.
Well, the basic difference between those two is, too, like when Star Wars Galaxies first started, you could be a Jedi, But it was hard.
Right.
They did not, you couldn't walk into the game and start wielding a lightsaber. You had to go out and find that.
They actually didn't even tell you. There was no, yeah, you had to no go. One knew how to become a Jedi.
Right.
There was like some cryptic group of things that if you did this and aligned yourself this manner and trained with these people and attuned yourself properly, then you might be able to find your way into the path of the Jedi.
But and the approach that I think that they set out to do, which nobody seems to be interested in anymore, is trying to populate a world. Say, you know, in this world, there's going to be people who are just tradesmen. Mm-hmm. There's going to be people who are just doing this. You don't – everybody doesn't have to be the big hero. And maybe that's not what people want, but I think it's an interesting idea to say, oh, here we have an entire world that's populated by thousands of players. Everybody doesn't have to be questing. Everybody doesn't have to be doing the same types of things. We can create fun experiences that are on the periphery of that.
But those experiences have to be compelling in and of themselves,
exactly.
Which
yeah.
I think is where.
Yeah, but I mean, are you trying to make a game, or are you trying to make a
virtual world?
Simulation? Yeah.
Yeah. What was the name of that stupid virtual world?
Second Life.
Yes. Yeah. Are you trying to make Second Life, or are you trying to make a game?
Well, I think that you have this opportunity with an MMO. I think when people first started talking about MMOs, you know, Ultima Online type of days, I think people were thinking, wow, what if instead of this single player experience, if I walked up to the guy who makes the sword of Ultimate Awesome, that's an actual person. You know, mm-hmm. What if all the people that I experience in this virtual world are actual people? And we've gotten farther and farther away from that. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because yes, they've, I think, gone closer and closer to perfecting fun and addictiveness.
Yep.
But I think that at the same time, it's become much more standardized, and you have these MMO experiences that are really cookie cutters of each other. And I think that's something I'd like to see blown apart.
See, now here's the problem is we came up with all these amazing ideas and insights about how to make this game different. ZeniMax is seriously like, guys, we just want to make Skyrim WoW. Like, we were just going to do that.
Exactly.
Like, is that cool? We were just going to release that? And like,
I don't think that's cool. Do you think that's cool?
I mean, I don't know, but I think all the fans are now expecting, like, you know, this Elder Scrolls MMO has been rumored for so long.
Let me connect another dot for you. The game director and vice president at ZeniMax is Matt Fuhrer. And Matt's history, especially over the last decade, has been Dark Age of Camelot.
Right.
And Mythic, yeah.
And Mythic.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he was instrumental in developing Dark Age Camelot and then prepping them to move into console space, which we know how that turned out.
Yeah.
However, obviously now he's with a team that's doing console, so I think he has a good idea of how this is going to work. That's another big piece right there, is that I don't think it's unreasonable to say that this could be the first very big MMO on consoles.
And it'll be totally bug-free when they ship it.
Hey-o!
Hey-o!
That came up all the time. You've been reading the Shaq thread.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's Bethesda. Like,
it's not. Thing is not Bethesda, though. This team is not Bethesda. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not going to be bug-free. But I do think what we're talking about is we're talking about an MMO that breaks all these boundaries and everything. This MMO is being made by a guy that made one of the oldest MMOs out there. And I hope that they do break some boundaries. I hope that they do come up with some cool stuff. But I don't think that ZeniMax is thinking about the way that the fans are thinking about it, which is it's a chance for MMOs to really create a new experience on a massively multiplayer level.
Yeah. And so, which fans actually think about that? Because honestly, at the end of the day,
maybe.
I appreciate that. And I'm sorry that I didn't really eat any asshole flakes this morning.
That's
I just
okay.
sprinkled a little bit on top of my yogurt.
I just feel like maybe it's because I play a lot of MMOs and am a fan of the experience and the potential of them, that even with the richness of Tamriel and that lore, and as much as I adore those games, do we need another fantasy themed MMO? I don't think so. I think what we do need.
Do you have one on your console right now?
Well, you make a good point.
Do you have one that's in the Elder Scrolls world?
But that's, I don't know if
that's. Are you a big fan of the Elder Scrolls? Did you play games such as and including Oblivion?
Yes.
And did you like these games?
Of course.
Did you like the Skyrims?
But I didn't.
You may also like.
Right.
I should say, I didn't like Morrowind or Oblivion.
Oh, but you like Skyrim.
I played 30 hours each of them, which is more than I play most games. But I didn't finish them. I didn't get into them. And
wow.
Skyrim, I loved. Like, it crossed that line where it was like I was immersed instead of like being annoyed by all the bugs and all
that's
the
problems. That's actually the same experience that I had.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have had that deal with Skyrim. So that's kind of interesting in itself. Like, I know this Elder Scrolls MMO has been worked on since before Skyrim came out. So which Elder Scrolls you know, ZeniMax working off of and trying to put this stuff together.
Jeff, Mike, how would you respond to this? Back center on Shaq said, ugh, every time I hear about this, my heart crushes. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I fear Bethesda will follow the way of BioWare.
What does that mean?
That means nothing at all. Who said that? Back center? You're wrong. No, well, first of all, it's not Bethesda, so he's off base completely. Second of all,
because it's ZeniMax, you're drawing a differentiation between Bethesda and ZeniMax.
I am. I don't. Okay. I think that Bethesda is working on something else. I think it's almost a BioShock Infinite type of thing where they're going to do another amazing game. Maybe it's not even an Elder Scrolls game. They're going to go do something else, like Fallout or something like that. And ZeniMax Online is going to work with this stuff and put this together. But going the way of BioWare, like they're going to keep making console games like Mass Effect 3 in addition to the MMOs?
I think when I hear that question, what it means to me is you're going to have all this promise and a great IP, and then you're going to end up with another WoW clone.
All right. Let me explain something to you about the way the MMO market works. They announce a new MMO. Everyone gets super excited, and it's totally going to beat World of Warcraft. And then it comes out, and people play it for about 2 months, and then they're like, well,
dude, Age of Conan says hi.
It's not nearly as good as I thought. And then the next MMO gets announced, like Titan, and they'll say, wait, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be better than World of Warcraft. And then it comes out, and people are like not that excited about it. So, no, I not to say, and I'm not making a judgment on this game as it is. And like I said, we've seen
My favorite part is that you dissed the internet for passing judgment, and then you proceeded to say that sentence.
It was awesome.
All right.
Mike understands the show, clearly.
I'm not saying it's going to be bad. I'm just saying everyone gets all excited. Everyone's like, this is going to beat World of Warcraft. Finally, we're going to get the MMO they were looking for, and then, surprise, it's Rift.
Well, I think it... Right, yeah. It is.
Which is not a bad game, but it's not the MMO we're looking for.
I don't understand. I mean, I hear that mentality a lot, and I don't get it in the sense that I played Rift. I played Rift for about two months. I had a great time with it.
No, yeah.
I played the last Call of Duty game for less than 2 months, but I don't consider that a bad game or a bad purchase.
I don't consider Rift necessarily a bad game, but again, it's something that we thought, you know, we've been talking about incredible innovations in the MMO field, and I don't think that's what we're going to get from even this game, unfortunately.
Well, and that's what I'm worried about, because you say, well, is it on a console? Which is a fair point and well taken, and I think that could bring something really exciting to the table,
yeah,
if that's the case. And B, is it in the Elder Scrolls universe? Now, I consider myself a pretty big Elder Scrolls fan, but what gets me coming to those games isn't the universe. It is a Tolkien-esque well-realized fantasy world, but there's nothing particularly gripping about. I mean, I'm not going to play a kart racer in the Elder Scrolls universe. I'm not going to play a shooter in the Elder Scrolls universe just because they're in the universe. What I like about those games,
tower defense,
exactly. Not going to get me excited. What I like about those games
is
the experience.
Oh, I would play that game
on iPad. Oh,
Elder Scrolls platform.
The dragons are coming.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, you just gave them the name. You should hold that stuff.
Dragons are coming. I don't think they're going to use that. But what's exciting about those games is that there is this wonderful tapestry of fiction upon which you lay a really interesting way of dealing with that world. That the leveling system is fun. The fact that I can explore all these areas at any time is fun. That is what's fun about it. Not just the fact that I can read a book about, you know, the guy who is in the third age, et cetera. And just because I layer, you know, well-worn MMO tropes on top of this really interesting tapestry of a world, I don't think is an instant recipe for success, which is why I'm hoping they bring something more interesting to the table.
Okay, I will take you to the test. When we come back on the other side, we will see if laying pirates over the Oblivion formula does just that.
Now we're talking!
I call the Greybeard's car in the kart racing game. Greybeard's for me.
So stick around. We will be right back where we will lead into the second segment with a little Risen 2. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out the service. One audiobook you might consider is The Wind Through the Keyhole, The Dark Tower by Stephen King. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. That's audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. All right, we are back and ready to get into some piratey goodness.
Arr.
So look, seriously, from reading Jeff's review, which I've been editing and talking to him about the game, it seems very much like this sort of applies a practical application of the theory you were talking about, which is that it seems to me that Risen is essentially the classic Bethesda role-playing game framework and structure, but with pirates.
Well, yeah, which you and McDonald and Davison made fun of me for
getting. Don't act like you know anything about this game. Jeff Mattis has been playing this game.
I want to listen.
I don't think you've ever played it.
Lay that down, that you guys made fun of me.
It's actually a lot closer to a traditional Piranha Bytes game. So it's got that European sensibility to it, where a lot of the game systems are maybe a little impenetrable to somebody who is experiencing them for the first time.
I was going to say, I don't mean to interrupt you, but sure, there's a whole flood of games out of this Eastern Europe kind of RPG tradition. It's been very interesting. The Witcher is probably the biggest one, and The Witcher 2 is
and
very
it's,
popular.
Yeah, and probably the Witcher 2 is probably my favorite of those.
Yeah, yeah.
So let me jump in for a second then, because I would imagine that given the size of our audience, that there's many, many of them that just went a Piranha what?
Oh, okay.
So you should probably give like a little bite. What do you mean by it's
so like, yeah, and I just wanted style. To say that there's a big, this is actually a pretty big movement that not a lot of people have been talking about. So go ahead and explain sort of this tradition of.
So single player RPGs like Gothic, the Gothic series, where they kind of throw you into this really, really sort of visually immersive world with a lot of stuff going on. And they do stuff like, the progression feels very organic and you're sort of, fiddling your way through to find out where you should go next. And you're, exploring down a pathway and getting your ass kicked and going, okay, I'll go there later. Instead of, here's the golden path to the next objective that you have. They also present puzzles and quests that have multiple solutions to them, but they don't really nudge you in the direction as to here are the three possible solutions you can do. It's like
Actual puzzle.
It's an actual puzzle, but it's still, because it's not real life and not, you don't have every option at your disposal, it still tends to feel, in certain cases where it doesn't quite click, like you're trying to figure out what the developer wants you to do rather than, I should be able to do this and.
Yeah. It's usually pretty obtuse in a way, like it's kind of inaccessible.
Right.
But that's what the fans of these games are into, because they want a challenge. They want sort of like an experience that they have to figure out.
And that is like all I played, the opening 20 hours or so were probably the most enjoyable, because it was sort of brutally hard at first, because you don't have all your combat moves, for example, you have to like train. So you have to accrue experience that you put into skill points. And then on top of that, you have to find somebody who can train you in that ability and pay them like 1,000 gold is your sort of average. And it's not easy to accrue. Like, you don't just have 1,000 gold fall on your lap. It's like you're getting 100 gold here, 100 gold there. Sometimes you'll get a little bit more. But the result is you'll run into some instances where you'll have three objectives and you'll be like, well, I can either pickpocket this guy or sword fight him or, some third option, but none of my skills in any of those things are to the point where I can do that. So I can either, spend the next 2 hours trying to accrue enough stuff so I can level up my pickpocketing or my sword play. And you're kind of keeping this all in the back of your mind at the same time. At the same time that that's going on, you realize that these trainers aren't like, there's no flashing sign over their head that says this guy will train you these abilities. So you go to a guy that does weapons training, and he may train you in sabers and, counterattacks, but the other guy will train you, or some other guy in a completely different area will train you in blocking and riposts and stuff.
So wait, are you telling me about something that's cool or not cool? Because it sounds like it could be cool, but I'm not sure that it is cool.
It depends on your point of view.
It depends on if you like that sort of, holy shit, what am I supposed to do? I need to wander around. I'm not just going to go to my mini map and find the next glowing icon. I mean, they do have
it's sort of a long-term investment thing, where if you do put the time in and if you figure it out and if you understand what's going on, it is rewarding.
Yeah,
there's a lot of reward to get from it, but it's not where the developers, like you said, they don't put a golden path down and say, go do this and then go do this and go do this. It's just sort of like, it's almost like the old Space Trader games where there is a whole world out there and a whole bunch of things for you to do, but it's kind of up to you to go figure them out. So I'm interested in you, Jeff, we're interested in this one at GDC. What drew you to it? Because you're not too well versed in this group of games, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed, I come from PC role-playing games were what I grew up on. And that's what I love. The people who appreciate that kind, those kinds of games feel like they reward true discovery.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's more realistic. You're not being reminded you're playing a game all the time. Because in life, there's going to be a dude who can sell you the thing.
Right.
And then another dude who sells you a different thing. But, it's not.
But in a game, you will run into these barriers where you're like, oh shit, I'm stuck. Like, I'm looking at my quest log and I'm like, I can't do any of this stuff. Time to like wander down a path, random path into the jungle and hope there's some stuff to kill. And to its credit, there is a lot of, the islands are very fun to explore. Like, they look really, I mean, this is on PC, but they look really good. There was a little bit of graphical weirdness, like hitches here and there and plants blooming in sometimes in the background. So it's not perfect, but it definitely, the Deep Silver engine definitely, I think, you know, helps them out a little bit in that respect.
These games do tend to be a little buggy because they are so complex.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is they tend to have issues with translation because it's oh. run by a, and maybe yeah. that's a terrible thing to say, but it's run no. by an Eastern European no. crew, and they don't always necessarily have like high budget for.
I'll give you two very specific examples.
There you go. That. Yeah. See, I know. I played it for about 5 minutes at GDC and.
So the main character, when he's like getting quests from it was particularly in the beginning, he would, when you'd exit the conversation, he would be like, sorry, must dash. But the way that he would say it would be like, sorry, mustache. You're just like, okay, obviously,
awesome.
Like,
I want to start, you know, ending my conversations that
sorry,
way.
Sorry, mustache.
Sorry, mustache.
I want a t-shirt with sorry, mustache on it.
That would be
Christian pretty. Will make it up for us. He loves a pencil mustache.
On the other side of that, and the less pleasant side of that. Okay, so you've got the story of the game sort of.
So may I interrupt for 1 second?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's your take on it? Did you wind up liking this or not? Because I guess my feeling is, listening to you, that if you were into the world and engaged in the game, then the sense of discovery that Francisco the Saber Trainer is where I go to learn about sabers makes me build a lot more interesting relationship because I found him and then I know who he is and why he's there, as opposed to just going to weapons trainer level 10 to 20.
Right, but you'll find yourself on like a completely different island and you're like, man, he's the only weapons trainer I know of. So I get the only way to train myself up is to go back to the ship, get on the ship, go back to the other island, walk my ass over to where he is.
Does it at least have good journaling capabilities so you can keep track of these things?
Like I said, the journal stuff sort of nudges you in the right direction, but sometimes you'll be like, they'll give you a quest like, oh, so-and-so lost something somewhere by the river.
You know what someone needs to do?
And a lot of people who play these games, they don't keep a journal in the game.
Right.
They put a pad next to them.
Well, you know, I used to do that, and I was just thinking about, and maybe it's because I have the iPad sitting here right in front of me, but it sure would be cool if someone making an old-school RPG like this made a companion app. You know, an official companion app for iPad, where you could keep all your own journal and stuff, because you always need that stuff.
And here's what I would love to see is, because these games can be so rewarding once you figure them out, because there's so much fun there to be had, I'm waiting, and Witcher is getting there. Witcher 2 on the Xbox is probably the closest we've gotten so far, but I'm waiting for one of these companies to really make it more accessible so that people who wouldn't normally, you know, get out an old school pen and paper thing, but they would get out an iPad app, like, can get into it and can go find the complexity. Well,
as long as I have to have an online enabled connection for a lot of these games, I could be logged into my game account on my iPad at the same time, and I could have my map open here, and I could be I could be live updating and see where I am in the game and what's going on and interacting with, you know, like, oh, well, I needed to go over here and get this without having to leave my view and disrupt that sense of being in the game and pulling up, you know, the full screen map stuff.
That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome.
We need a tablet controller. Yeah. There you go. For the
I
already have it. It's my iPad.
I
want to
hear
it in my hand.
I want to hear the other translation error.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not really an error, but it's one of those things where you're like, oh, they didn't do that, did they? So the general story, real quick, top line story is, you work for the Inquisition, which is basically this imperial force that's, you know, arrived on these islands.
As you do.
Then you've got
Mel Brooks's Inquisition or Monty Python's Inquisition?
The Inquisition.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
I like how you guys split it amongst yourselves.
So you got that faction that you start with right at the beginning of the game. First thing they tell you, they're like, we want you to infiltrate the pirates, basically be a spy.
So it's an undercover mission thing.
So yeah, they basically disavow any knowledge of your existence as an Inquisition dude and, you know, and send you off, and you have to meet up with the pirates and figure stuff out. There's also natives on the island, which are...
Oh, no.
They're
I see where this is going.
No.
They're it's really
I did read that.
It's really stereotypical like presentation. Bad. So you've got, you know, it's kind of like the I mean I understand what they're trying to do, and there's a border between authenticity and like racist, but it really like it made me. There were a couple parts that made me uncomfortable. So,
I think what you're saying is it made you uncomfortable.
Yeah. So, and that's the issue with these games is like it's tone deaf to the culture that we're in because it comes from this other side of the world culture. Which not that anyone's backwards or anything, but it's just a different culture, and they're sort of and they're making these games for the people in Eastern Europe, but they're now trying to like bring them and successfully. There are definitely a lot of people here who love The Witcher and who like will like Risen, I'm sure, and all these things.
But I would say when you translate one of these games. One example that I'm okay with, which is early on you come across a plantation that's being managed by the Imperials and worked by the natives, right? So you look at that and you're like, okay, that's a little fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But then the more extreme example is you run into some pirate and he's like, every other sentence he's referring to the spear chuckers and like, and you're just like, you're listening to this stuff and you're like, I get it. I get the lost in translation, like, you know, sensitivity thing.
It's not even a cute thing,
but
that's
not
a mistake.
Even that's just like straight up, like, you know, this is really not good.
You should not. You've got to pay to get rid of that. Pay to figure it out, and you need to know who's playing your game. Like, if you're making it for a worldwide audience, it needs to make sense.
There are plenty of other ways they could have handled that, other than, you know, the way that they did, but. And the only other thing, the other thing I want to touch on really quick is as cool as the exploration elements are, and like there's stuff to go out and do and everything. Ultimately, the combat does not like it. It just never really satisfied me.
Now, which side did you go? Did you go pirate or did you go voodoo?
I went voodoo. Although it was sort of like when I started out, it was a few points into sword play so I could at least kill some stuff to, you know, make my way through, and a couple of points into marksmanship, and then I started, you know, and then you've got
cunning. So basically you can basically go voodoo, which is magic, guns, which will be like muskets and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, cunning is like you know, thief like abilities.
So there's more than that too.
Yeah. There's and then voodoo, and I wanna say there's one other one that escaping me.
So there's a lot of options.
But anyway, yeah, the voodoo stuff is actually real. Okay, so sword play, neat idea, but the whole piecemealing out your abilities and the fact that when you're fighting non-human enemies, your riposts and parries and all that shit doesn't mean anything because you're fighting a silverback gorilla. It's just going to run up and punch you in the face until you're dead, like two or three hits if you're not strong enough. So it's a little too inaccessible. It's like it's almost like if you're like know this how these games work and you can just dive in and go, okay, I'm going to methodically like build up these abilities. But I was sort of finding my way through it and ended up with a more balanced character than probably was beneficial to me.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, swordplay okay when you're fighting human opponent or you know human NPCs.
So bring this thing home if you're sitting at home listening to this, and this is obviously the PC version that's out now.
Yeah.
It's coming out on PS3 and 360 over the summer. What do you think the prospects are for that? Where would you leave someone as they come away from this?
Well, based on what happened with the last console version of Risen, which I didn't play, but it was apparently pretty terrible compared to the PC, just graphically and otherwise.
Should they be able to pull it off technically, where would you leave it?
I would say, man, it's because I'm having done with the game. I am still sort of torn because there's a lot of stuff to recommend that is good, like the exploration stuff. And if you can sort of look past how janky some of the combat and other character building systems are, you'll probably enjoy it.
So the story of these weird games out of Europe runs, right? Which brings me to Sniper Elite. Although it's being developed in the UK by Rebellion, has this same like very strong European fan base. Which I have to tell you that, you know, up until a couple of months ago, Sniper Elite was not particularly on my games I should be watching out for radar. And you know, suddenly the overwhelming response of people all over the internet was like, okay, I have to pay a little attention to it. And now Jeff and I have both played it, and I would say that same description fits its space in shooters as well as it fits Risen space in RPGs.
Yes. I would argue that Sniper Elite is, I'm finding it to be more fun but that's because it's not, it doesn't have that many layers of systems to figure out and, yeah. and you know, potential for jank, I guess.
Is so Sniper Elite is out on...
By the way, that's the name of my new band.
Potential Sniper Elite.
For jank.
Potential, mm-hmm. potential for jank.
I can't wait to
it's
see
a cover band for...
For, I don't know.
All right, Creed.
Way to,
it's your Creed cover band, Potential for Jank.
Put them on the spot. And
more like Jank Guaranteed.
Well, what I want to know about Sniper, so it is, you're right, there is a huge audience for this game.
So let me give it the description, because people always ask for this. Yes. So it's on PC, 360, and PS3. It's a World War II era shooter. It is, well, and shooter is a general description. It is very definitely focused on sniping. It is third person view. It takes place at the very, very end of World War II in Europe. And you are tasked with basically keeping the rocket technology that the Germans had been developed out of the hands of the Russians as the Allies prepare to go their separate ways and deal with the onset of the Cold War in 20 years. Right. So you're in Berlin, and you are tasked with all kinds of interesting sorts of, you know, get this guy, kill this guy, retrieve this information sort of tasks that a sniper would have.
Yeah, set up explosives on the road so that when the convoy comes by, you'll, you know.
So that laid down, hit it. What was your question, Mike?
Well, no, I just, I want to know, I haven't played it. Okay. I was away for a little while out of town, but I've heard a lot about it, and obviously there's an audience for this game. My question is the gameplay justify the audience, or is it just that kind of thing where people are like, oh man, isn't being a sniper fun? Like,
what's the difference between those two? Because my answer was going to be yes, because isn't being a sniper fun?
Mm. But I mean, is it a good game?
Isn't being a sniper fun?
Well, skateboarding's fun, but Tony Hawk's not about skateboarding. It's about scoring points.
Here's the stuff that's awesome about the game, which is, I think, it's the sniping stuff.
Yes.
And they've done a really clever thing where they tie your heartbeat into how long you can go into the whatever bullet time for aiming, and your heartbeat will elevate if you're running around instead of sneaking, or if you get shot, your heartbeat rate will elevate.
That's brilliant.
So you're basically, you know, you can take out a guy, if you have all the time in the world, you can like hold your breath and take the shot, but once they know where you are and you've got bullets flying up and they occasionally hit
it's
you.
It's really
you,
hard to hold
you
your
take
breath.
A beat on that next guy, and if you get hit, your heart rate's jumping up. And then
so
when
there
it gets
are
to the top,
really complex mechanics built around the act of sniping.
Yeah, and if you go all the way up to the top tier, so at the bottom tier, there's no real physics modeling. It's put the crosshair on something, pull the trigger. In the middle tier, which is probably where I think most people would want to play, is there's some drift and some wind. At the top tier, there's a lot of – it's pretty hard to hit a shot over –
And
over
I think they
100 yards,
they
say.
Remove the indicators, too.
Like, they remove the indicators, right. Yeah. And so I think the middle is fun, because the one thing that's cool about the sniping mechanic is that you go into that focus mode, and you have to stay in the focus mode for a period of time, and during which the lead indicator, if you ever played like a flight sim, you know how you have like that lead indicator that shows where the bullet will fire? They have a similar sort of thing for this for sniping, and as you stay in focus mode, that pip gets smaller and smaller and smaller, showing you where the bullet will fall. And so you get in this risk-reward thing of, well, I'm under fire, and I know I'm holding my breath, and I know the longer I hold my breath, the less, you know, the more it'll take me to recover the next shot. And there's four guys down there, and I need to hit all of them before they can get back to their friends and raise. So you've got all these things going on, and that's a cool balance.
That sounds cool, yeah. I mean, that sounds like they're – because sniping, before we had this conversation, in my mind, is Call of Duty, where you just put
This is much more methodical. It's a really methodical thing of like when you get this good shot and you pull it off, it's really satisfying. Well, we could argue about the kill cam because it's
– Sure. Well, let's get – because I really like it, but it's a total guilty pleasure. Like, I mean, I think it's – It's so gratuitous, and
it's so gratuitous.
And it's like, you know, people that don't play games walk in and they see you and they're what the fuck are you doing?
First DLC is like kill Hitler, right?
Yeah,
like that's the first thing.
Yeah,
like
that's
the thing.
What
you can
do from there? What's second DLC?
Jeff, have you seen the kill cam on this
zombie
game?
Zombie Hitler.
No. Okay, so the kill cam on this
is it worse than Mortal Kombat or
better than Mortal? Well, it depends on what you mean by worse.
What do you mean?
Describe the kill cam. I haven't seen it.
So the kill cam in this game is essentially, so first of all, you have a bullet track, which is the classic slow motion following the bullet on its path to the target, which is cool. That's always cool. You know, you feel like you're flying along. And then when you get to the victim, it stops and does a like
cross section,
full color cross-section,
like CSI?
X-ray, nice. CSI-style bullet penetration shot with like organ explosions and bullet shatter and bone shatterings. And
the bullet actually deforms as it goes through the body. Wow. As yeah, it hits stuff.
So it like, is almost like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty
intense. I
think
you guys just solved the problem you were trying to solve before.
Why people like it?
Why do people like this game?
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely...
That's gratuitous, but I'm telling you, man, like because it's so methodical...
I'm not passing judgment on that.
But that's your reward. If you're going to all this trouble to shoot someone, guess what your reward is? They're going to get shot. And that's what they're doing, is they're making it, you know, that much more clear that you did some serious damage. All that work you put in.
It's probably different for different folks, but I find it more satisfying, the actual act of having to get that shot and the methodical thing of like getting into focus mode and then also just, you know, really like waiting for my shot and gingerly pulling off the shot. And the other thing that I think they did really well is that they have at least taken a step forward in trying to recreate the situational aspects of being a sniper. And by that, I mean needing to figure out where in the world to get to take your shot from and being able to do things like we do in Battlefield. You know, like in Battlefield, if you're going to play a sniper, a lot of times you get a couple of claymores and put the claymores out behind you, right? So, and I haven't seen a game that really replicated that, but at a slower speed, because there things happen so fast. Here, it's really great to spend a little time and scout around the building you're going to be working out of, and lay down a trip mine and lay down a landmine, and then, you know, use like a rock to distract a guard and get around behind them and then set yourself up in a really good position. And it feels like a solo sniper on this assignment who's, you know, in a, like if they get to you and you're not really ready to deal with it, they're going to probably kill you.
Well, and it's all the methodical pace that it takes is also really nice, because you also have a couple of other weapons you can pick up, like a Thompson submachine gun, but you got two clips for it. Which really,
if it goes to shit, it goes to shit.
Yeah,
fast.
If you got more than one or two guys that you got to worry about, you're pretty much.
And the regular
just
shooting
restarting.
Is not good, and the regular locomotion, the regular moving and stuff is not like the game does this like weird animation swivel hip thing where like dude looks like he has like some sort of weird action figure where his hips turn at the waist, and it's like bizarre. You're like running one direction, his torso is facing another direction. You're like, wait, he's a robot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That said,
robot Hitler.
That said, it was really nice.
That's the third DLC. Yeah. You kill Hitler, and then he comes back as zombie Hitler, and then you shoot him again, and then they turn him into a robot.
Or a vampire.
Have you ever heard of... I know we have other things to do, but I wanted... one more thing along this line of, like, super complex, niche, hardcore games. Have you ever heard of a game called iRacing?
I've heard of it.
iRacing.com? Do you know about this game?
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, I'm a racing nut, so
well,
I know
that's the thing. That's what I said. Like this is a...
And they took the guy out, like, two or three years ago and put him on the track in a Formula Trainer, and which is, like, you know, like three, like one of the Formula Mazda cars, and he was rolling off laps that were just insane.
Yeah.
The problem was that he... Did you see that video?
I think I saw it once, yeah.
And so the deal was, the problem was that while he had developed the situational and positional awareness of how to deal with the car, the part that didn't come into play is how much physical training
you actually have to do.
He crapped his pants.
Turn the thing. Anyway,
no, he couldn't endure the sheer physical
video games instead.
The physical exertion,
right,
and especially dehydration.
To explain it, like, we're talking about these really niche hardcore games. This iRacing game is the most hardcore a racing game can get. It is not built for graphics. It's not built for fun. It's not built for anything except
it's built for fun.
Well, except to realistically simulate what it's like to race these cars. And that's where the fun is, but it's not like you get a big, you know, it's not like a Gran Turismo or even like a Burnout where there's like fun crashing and all this nonsense. It's literally built to realistically simulate cars, and guys will spend thousands of dollars on chairs designed for this game, wheels designed for this game to make it as realistic as possible. And it sounds like that's kind of what Sniper does with sniping, is it's like, look, the act of sniping, we're going to take that and go as deep as we possibly can on it. You know, not that they're, you know,
they
maybe
could probably go a lot deeper, but in a similar sort of thought pattern, yes, they made it really cool to be a sniper and to be there prone in the moment and get your shot.
Really deep dive.
But then there's a whole lot of other crap that happens, and that's where the game starts to fall apart. Is like because of course eventually you alert people, and eventually it does kind of become a you got to shoot more guys because they're coming at you, and it deteriorates pretty rapidly there.
Yeah.
Wait, would you agree?
Well,
what do you think?
See, I've the way I play it, I actually start areas over. Like if things go too much to hell, I'm like, okay, I obviously didn't approach this in the right way, and we'll go back because it feels like those old school Splinter Cell games.
Well, intend you to do that because it scores you also. Yeah. So throughout the game, it's scoring you based on how good a shot you took, where you made the hit, whether you were stealthy, that sort of thing. So I think it's encouraging you to go back and replay those levels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, for sure. In fact, aren't there leaderboards?
Yeah, there's leaderboards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's very that competitive improve my best. Performance kind of thing. I've run into a couple situations where when it disintegrates into,
dudes charging at you,
you're fucked. But
then again, if you were a sniper holding the Springfield, by yourself on that mission, you would tend to think that he probably would be screwed.
True.
I mean, that's probably pretty much it for you.
True.
And you're going to do multiplayer over the weekend?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll look forward to that.
The guy at the top of the leaderboards. One day, some government agents show up at his house, and they say, you do a really great job on that game.
Starfighter.
We've got something to tell you. Hitler's still alive.
Actually, it's zombie Hitler.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
Unfortunately, he can't live up to the physical requirements. He gets dehydrated.
He couldn't hold it. The rifle.
That sort of sounds like it'd be a Black Ops.
The master of the Segway. He's the master of the Segway.
When we come back on the other side, we'll hit some COD blobs and the rest of it in the second half of Weekend Confirmed. Stick around. We'll be right back. Zombies and more zombies. That'll be part of Black Ops 2, as will multiplayer, but neither of those were things that they communicated a lot about because they wanted to really focus on the story. Now, for all the times that people are down on another Call of Duty game, I liked Black Ops. I know it was flawed, but I thought that, by the way, if you have not played Black Ops and you want to, then you might not want to listen to this one little clip. I thought the Fight Club thing was kind of cool. And I thought the fact that you actually had a character that you were playing in the game was kind of cool. And I think that Treyarch actually, at this point, probably is the most invested of all the developers working on Call of Duty. I mean, Infinity Ward, let's be honest, those guys are off at Respawn, right?
And, yes.
And Sledgehammer is Sledgehammer, and they did a fine job. They worked very hard on the game and created a good game and obviously had some support there. But like Treyarch now, this is... Like they've done a lot of Call of Duty.
I would agree that they are now the premier Call of Duty developer.
And their take on the series is a little bit different in that they're definitely into the story side of the game. They're definitely into that side.
It's funny. I reviewed, and I think we were in the same place when we did this, but I reviewed both Modern Warfare 3 and Black Ops.
Yep.
And both times, I really, people might get angry at me for saying this, but I kind of wanted to find issues. Like I kind of wanted to have problems with the game so I could do a bad review and get them to shake up the series, because I think that Call of Duty is like the most traditional series you'll find nowadays. We know what Black Ops 2 is going to be like because we know what Call of Duty games are like. But both times I reviewed those games, they were solid games. Like Treyarch put a lot of good work into Black Ops and Modern Warfare 3. I think the same thing. We're talking about Treyarch specifically, but they really care about these games, and they have unlimited resources at this point, like in terms of practical sense.
Yeah.
They have a staff that can make as much content as they want. And even if they don't, Activision will get Sledgehammer and anybody else to do all the work.
Raven
with
and everybody
them,
else
so.
And their brother will be.
Yeah, yeah. So they'll get more studios to do the work. So they have unlimited resources, and so of course it's gonna be a solid game. But what I'm looking forward to seeing is the thing that Treyarch did really well with Black Ops is they did their own thing. Like the remote control car.
Yep.
Where on and then the suburb map, which I don't know the name. That's the famous name. What's the name of that map with this in the suburbs with the? Where, oh, I'm sound like an idiot with the moving vans and radiation. The radiation town.
I think that might have been it. It was Radiation. I don't know.
Is it Radiation Town?
The internet here is really tough when you have the door to the studio closed, so I'm not going to look it up right now, but it might have been Nuketown.
Nuketown. There you go. Yep. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry all you angry Nuketown. Call of Duty fans out there who are like, how do you not know about Nuketown? I know about the map. And like they had a whole car racing section outside of that.
Yeah.
That's all Treyarch. Activision didn't say, hey, put a car racing section out there. Treyarch is like, no, this is cool. We're putting it in the game. And I got to respect that. And the same thing with zombies. Zombies isn't something where Activision said, you got to put a zombie mode in this game. And because that,
they were just
messing
around with it.
Right.
Mostly.
They're like, this is just cool. And now it's become a mainstay thing. So I don't know. These types of discussions are kind of just like the Bethesda thing where we know next to nothing about how this game actually goes. Did you play it? You said you saw it or no?
I saw it extensively played. I sat two chairs away from the guy in the development team
okay.
who was playing
but
it.
We still
he was
have...
definitely live playing it, and it was absolutely up. So there's a couple of things that I'll throw out there, and you guys can tell me what you want to talk about. So first of all, I've gotten to know Mark Lamia and some of the other folks over there at Treyarch pretty well, and I do get this really strong sense that they're really into it. So it's funny because I hear him sort of switch into that like media trained rhetoric mode, and I kind of want to like punch around him because at the same time he's saying stuff like, well, you know, we want to push the boundaries. Well, of course you want to push the boundaries, and I get that because you're excited. Meanwhile, you have to make a Call of Duty game for the Call of Duty fans.
You have to make the best selling game in the world.
Yeah, and you,
that's
have,
what
to
you
make,
have to do.
And you have to make
point.
That game. I mean, at the end of the day, there's this big huge audience that wants to take home a Call of Duty game and be reunited with their Call of Duty friends, mm-hmm. so to say, mm-hmm. in that virtual world and play that Call of Duty experience. So it's a tough trade-off for them. So one of the things that is to me seems maybe the most risky is this idea of putting choice into the game and having it have branching storylines. And Mark told me that, you know, that obviously some of these will be really in your face Call of Duty moments, and you'll make a choice and that'll change the way the game plays out. They're also planning, though, to have many of them be much more subtle. Some of them would be skill based. You know, how well did you do in this mission? What happened? And the outcome of that mission influencing things that were going on in the story down the line. Who did you save? Who did you team up with? Which way did you go in a level? And all of those things could change the outcome of the game, which starts to sound, I mean, that's not Call of Duty because, and this is sort of where we got crosswise is trying to communicate with them because, you know, to me, there's a Call of Duty story. All these games have had a story, and you get to the end and it's like you got to the end. But they're not
the movie, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, you play it, but you're watching the Call of Duty movie every year.
So, and this is what he told me, is that in the reality of this is that at the end, there are endings, multiple endings to this game, number one, and that there isn't a good ending or a bad ending. They're just endings. There are places that you get to at the end of the game based off of the decisions you made, and that's what happened at the end of this Cold War.
So this time next year, you guys could be arguing about which Call of Duty Black Ops 2 ending is canon and which one isn't.
Yeah.
That does sound like something we would argue about.
Well,
he said sarcastically.
But even
I think that's a really cool direction for him.
I like
to go.
It.
Especially in light of the fact that I spent a lot of this, not a lot of this week, it was pretty short, but I played through the first episode of Walking Dead this week.
Oh, yeah.
Which is excellent.
Do you recommend it?
Very highly.
Okay.
Very highly.
It's funny because in your guys' show notes, Walking Dead was most of the show, and then Elder Scrolls got announced today. So go ahead. Talk about Walking Dead, though. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, it's excellent. And the thing that they do really smartly, I think.
This is very distracting because we were talking about Black Ops 2. Like,
no, I'm relating it to
okay.
what you're talking about.
Okay, you are going. Okay, cool.
Because it's a story. Yeah. You're playing a story. There's very little game. It's a lot of story and just picking dialogue and making choices. It's you're playing a story. You know, it's this
Telltale. It's Telltale,
with.
But people did take us to task for saying that their games are simplified, that because they said they've gotten much better.
No, they're adventure games.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
exactly. You know, the what you sign up for is experiencing a story.
Okay,
but you have control
bring us back to Call of Duty.
Right. You have a large amount of control over it, and the game does a really smart thing where it gives you feedback as you go. Although you can turn it off in the options, but it gives you feedback as you go of how these little things that might slip your notice are actually impacting you.
Hmm.
How as you branch, as you continue, so and so notices that you trusted them, or so and so thinks you might
That's
be
smart.
Lying, or and obviously there are enormous decisions in that game. Pick one of these two people to save, for example. But there are tons of little subtle choices, and I think it makes me excited that Call of Duty is going this way because I think that really expands what the game experience is like. But I hope it would be wonderful if it didn't feel like these arbitrary big choices all the time, that it is something a little more subtle, and that I do have some indication as I'm going of the subtlety that's in play.
My concern listening to him describe it was that it's all of those things, except that I wouldn't know because they weren't going to give me those clues,
right,
and that I would just be playing because they're very much into this idea of it being a rich story experience. And then I'm not sure that's going to work with their audience, because I think that there's a big number of Call of Duty people who are going to say, I want to get to the good ending.
Well, that that's the main problem with Walking Dead, too, is the decisions that you make in Walking Dead do pop up, and they say, oh, she thinks that you're cool, or she trusts you, or whatever. But there's never – there's not a good indication of what that means. Like, you know that you've made a decision, but you don't get immediate feedback on what that decision will do for you later.
But I found it to be enough for me that I knew that the game was noticing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was a moment where a guy was like, I'm so glad I did this for you because you're my friend. And I was like, oh, yeah, because I fucking earned that friendship. Because I remember all those times when he
was
like,
me.
He noticed me being friendly to him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think there were bits of reward, but I loved the fact that the notification system was there after the fact, in the sense that it wasn't like, hey, you're about to make a decision that's going to impact you. Right. It was more, which I think
the game let
I have
you
a problem
know
with
it.
Mass Effect does that, which is sort of like, here's a big decision. Are you going blue or red, bro? Blue or red?
Don't go look on Google.
Yeah. Whereas games, you know, I even thought back to Heavy Rain, in the sense that, you know, that is a game where it never really tells you where you're going down the path.
Right.
But I almost felt like, oh, it could have been interesting if it had been like, well, did that, and now you should know that someone's going to...
Dynamic consequences that are seeded way early in the game are always really, really cool.
I want to, before we go all the way back to Call of Duty, I want to say this about Walking Dead, too. Walking Dead, like, a lot of the discussion about games over the past couple of years, especially indie games, has been, like, games, moving towards games as art, like, games trying to become art. Walking Dead, I think, is fascinating. It kind of goes the other way. Like, it's like, here's a story, here's a TV show, and we're just going to sort of gamify it a little bit. Like, you're basically playing a TV show. You're playing, you know, and it's sort of art as games, in a sense. Like,
I completely agree with you, and I found myself wishing that Telltale had the means, the resources, and the time to put into play Rockstar's technology from L.A. Noire. Like, I want to see
facial stuff. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. I want to see a Telltale game, an adventure game like that, with that kind of, like, actual actors, because...
Although I will tell you, I mean, I think that the cel-shaded stuff that they did, the art style, was really good.
It's really smart, is what they did. They couldn't afford the facial technology, but they needed those faces to be super expressive, and that's why they did it the cel-shaded way.
I agree with you that for the game that it was really good. Obviously, harkens to a comic book art style, which is really effective. But I found, especially the character I was playing, would often have an exaggerated, like, surprise look or something, and I was like... You know, if that was an actual actor giving a little subtle performance, mm-hmm. which we've achieved in this other game, it would be such an interesting, rich experience.
There's probably a pretty high expense associated with
that. Of
course, that's why. It's Telltale.
Yeah.
And similarly, at the same time, like so Treyarch is invested enough in their story that one of the things they went to the effort to show us was their next step in motion capture. Which is, you've seen guys and gals in, you know, the latex suits with the, or spandex, I guess. Sorry, not latex, spandex suits.
That's a different club.
That's at night, yeah.
Spandex suits.
Say, the next step in motion capture is nudity.
With the ping pong balls and stuff on them, right?
Sure.
So the step they've taken now is that they have done, like, these crazy compact, almost like, I guess they're like about maybe half inch on spacing grids over their character actors' faces.
Yeah.
Like Pinhead.
Yeah, it looks like Pinhead. To do facial capture,
right.
And it was pretty impressive to the extent that, without going too deep down the rabbit hole of capture, is that oftentimes what happens is you go mocap, and then the mocap goes back to the animating studios, and the animators go in and fix it, and they do that to make it look good. They showed us raw footage of a woman, like, giving a conversation into a video as if she was Skyping with someone, and it was unedited, unfixed, and it looked pretty damn believable just with the animatics. It was pretty impressive. Let me paint the picture of what Black Ops 2 is like so that I can get you the other piece so you can put the whole picture together.
Sorry.
So the game is a direct sequel. It starts off in the 80s. And one of the things that's going to be maybe tough to believe for some people is that Frank Woods did not die against Krychenko. He's alive. Mm-hmm. And he's like the bridge character.
We're in just in such comic and book town with this.
It's sort of it is a, so, but that's so you're it starts off in the 80s, which is painting the picture of the Cold War, which they do in purpose so that you can see the origin of the guy who's going to go on to be the supervillain in the meat of the game. And the meat of the game moves forward into 2025. So they go into near future, and in the near future, China is the
wait. So it starts in the 80s, and we get to 2025.
It starts in the 80s, yeah. And it's briefly there, so it introduces you know the Cold, introduces you to the idea of a Cold War, explains who these characters are, lets you see the genesis of the supervillain.
And it does so by voiceover during load screens, or
no, you play. Okay. No, you'll be playing
the first part of the game.
You'll be playing the first part of the game in the 80s, and you'll be interacting to some degree with the with the character who's going to become the villain. Because one of the things they wanted to do is they want to bring in this idea of like. You might actually develop some like affections for this person. You might have some mixed givings later on when they become the bad guy. It's, remember the airport scene, of course, the legendary airport scene. Like they obviously like to mess with your emotions somewhat. I don't know if they'll go that far, but obviously that's what they want to do. So then they come up to 2025. And in 2025, their picture of it, you know, one of the things is they've gone for this very authentic look or authenticity in the game, period. So they've consulted with this guy from the Brookings Institute who's very much a futurist, and it's not laser beams and particle cannons. It's all stuff that makes sense. It's, you know, next-generation drone technology. It's cyber warfare. It's battlefield robotics. It's stuff like the coolest thing that you saw that was crazy was just a scope on a rifle that used the same sort of scanning technology like they use in millimeter wave stuff at the security line at the airport. So it's all very believable sort of stuff. Likewise, the Cold War of the future is the rest of the world against China because China has all the rare earth metals.
What kind of iPhones do they have?
They have sweet iPhones.
I bet.
They just have iPhone. You know, they're just like iPad, they have iPhone.
It's
iPhone 27, but it's just iPhone.
It's just a piece of clear glass and pictures appear on it.
Chip in your neck.
So in addition to the story, which they'll have lots of stuff going on in, they've added this other mode to the game that is part of the single player game called Strike Force Levels. And Strike Force Levels essentially bring a almost sort of Battlefield-like sandbox gameplay in metagame into the entire game that also impacts your single player story. Let me explain. So at any given time after you get into the future era and you become the operative in 2025, you'll also be able to accept Strike Force missions. There might be any number of them available to you at the time. Mark said it's not going to be a ton. There'll be like 3 or 4 or so missions available at your base of operations at any time. You will then go out on this mission and the outcome of that mission will impact the single player story based off of how successful or unsuccessful you are in them. When you go on the mission, it's a sandbox mission that feels basically like a Battlefield or any other multiplayer online sandbox shooter game that you drop into single player. And you can play this game from any perspective point of view, so you can play it. So the mission they showed was a shipment of weapons is on this boat at a dock that's about to go sail off to a place that you're going to go to later on in the game. You come in as an operative with a strike team, and your strike team has to secure the docks.
Strike team are other human beings?
No, all AI.
Okay.
So you come into this dock scene with a strike team, leading a strike team. You have to secure the dock, take out the defensive positions, disable the anti-aircraft battery and call in a strike on the ship. It sounds exactly
like a single player level.
It sounds like a Battlefield mission because keep in mind it's sandbox. It's not linear. There's just a big map that you're playing on, and you can play this game either through the eyes of a soldier or roll all the way out and play it as a real time strategy game.
Really?
You can pick it's almost or like a Tom Clancy game. So you're dropping in and you can pick this squad and set bounding guards for them. So you could say like go over here to the corner of this container, proceed forward up this back alley over here, and then attack this machine gun nest. You guys over here go up this little cavern here, and then go over here and flank these guys and attack this machine gun nest from here. You guy go over here, launch a drone, and tell the drone to go over here and attack. Or you can jump down in and play any of those characters. You can pull all the way back out and drop in and out of any of the characters whenever you want to. And you can also jump in to any of the drones that are activated on the field at any time and play as them. So
that sounds really, really awesome, and I'm really bummed that I probably won't experience the game.
Well, You can get to that in a minute. Don't derail things. Like, that's a huge derail, Jeff.
I know. I'm sorry.
That is like a tremendous train wreck derail. Yeah. And we can debate that.
It sounds like a wild mode.
It looked incredibly hard to play.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like, it sounds awesome when you figure it out. But I wonder if, just after hearing that, I wonder if next time we talk about a Call of Duty game, it'll have to be, we're going back to the core. Everybody, you know, we went too far away.
Well, you wanted to talk about difference.
No, but that's what I'm saying is, I wonder if they are, and I don't know.
This comes out
in November, so we'll see.
It was amazing. Like, I'm watching this dude, and like, he starts off in the helicopter, and he lays out all his bounding attacks like that, and then he's like jumping into this one guy and leading an attack on a machine gun, and then he jumps right back out, and he hops over here, and he gets into like this rotor drone, and he goes over and like goes around behind a bunch of containers and knocks out some guys who are about to flank him, and then he pops back out and he hops into another guy and he goes over here and heals his two teammates who are running down on health, and he pulls back out and he like gives some new commands. I'm like, holy
shit. Sounds great. Sounds fucking rad. Yeah, it sounds amazing. But you know, the dude bro that goes buys Call of Duty day one, $60, he's not gonna get into that. He's just gonna go look for the multiplayer. Like,
you could play the whole thing as just a character. You could just drop in, and
which is fine. Yeah, and I'm not saying any of it's bad. I want to play that. That sounds interesting. Sure,
optional missions, or are they required for them?
So they're not required, quote unquote, but they are part of the world that your single player campaign is taking place in. And as the single player campaign takes place, it's existing in this Cold War that's happening, and you can influence the outcome of the Cold War, and that will have influence on what happens in your single player game.
Sounds kind of like Spec Ops, but it actually means something instead of its own separate mode.
It's sort of like, like Spec Ops with more to it that means something in your game.
Sounds fun. Sounds good.
I thought it was rad. I was like, this is, you know, that to me is a pretty adventurous departure. Like, that's a lot of work to get your team to build that up.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
It's cool.
So, well, it looked really cool.
I didn't even get to see it, but like, how long did it take him to set bounty modes for all of his little?
Oh, dude, he was fast. I mean,
all right.
As long as the interface is clean and clear. I was watching his fingers. I mean, basically, it looked like to set bounds, you pushed one of the face buttons like X and then held it and let go at bounds pops.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And Treyarch knows that. I mean, even their little Easter egg zombies game, top-down game, actually worked really well. Like, it controlled well and played well. So I'm excited. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see it. I'm a little cautious because it sounds like it's way far away from where a Call of Duty game that needs to be the best-selling game in the world needs to be. But the benefit of that is they know multiplayer is going to sell no matter what. They know that the dude bros are going to go buy it.
And they showed their single player. And their single player was the ridiculous, over-the-top, crazy fest that you would expect.
Trailer that we saw. Yeah, it was like...
Yeah, and you know, the trailer was like, what, a minute and a half? And It was easily a half-hour demo that he played from, like, hopping into an anti-aircraft battery and taking out drones that were flying into, like, driving the truck, to sniping, to running through and shooting people, to throwing up those quad rotors and having them scout ahead of him, and then finally in the VTOL airplane. I mean, it was, like, all kinds of crazy crap.
Yeah, I wonder, because that's the thing, is, like, Call of Duty, the problem has been the past couple of years, everyone's like, well, it's not going to be fun anymore. It's not going to be as fun as the last game was. And each game is fun. It's just as fun as the game before it. But I wonder if it'll go the other way in sort of a Halo-like sense, where it gets to be too much. Like, you just go overboard. Like, there's too many things
going on. There sure is
going
to be a lot, because they promise all of that, plus Strike Force, plus multiplayer.
Plus zombies.
Plus more zombies than ever before.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of stuff on that disc.
And yet, Jeff won't have to worry about it.
No, that's true. Sorry for the derail.
Why aren't you going to play Call of Duty Black Ops 2, Jeff?
Well, some guy you don't even know the name of.
Let me start you with an ironic. I find it supremely ironic that a game whose story is ostensibly centered around some outside entity taking control of U.S. weapon systems has hired a consultant. So that basically they've hired Ollie North as a consultant, who was convicted of three felonies involving selling weapons to Iran and Nicaragua back in the 80s.
Well, right way, you know. That means he's an expert.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't buy
he's committed exactly the war crimes that they're talking about in the game.
Allegedly
committed. Nobody sue me, please.
Oh, no. He was convicted. He was convicted of three felonies, which were then vacated because of his pre-trial congressional testimony. So they're basically like, yeah, you're guilty, but you kind of blew the lid off the Iran-Contra thing, so we're going to let you skate. And now he's collecting checks for
So are you officially boycotting because they're using him as a consultant?
Yes.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with the game. Actually sounds really cool.
Okay.
I think that's incredibly admirable, Jeff, to be honest with you. I mean, we can joke it all we want, but you don't have to agree with whatever, but you have the courage of your convictions to actually, you know, say, hey, this is important to me. I think that's pretty cool. And I think it is something that maybe it is a derail, but I think it is something that, you know.
Well, I meant it's derailing the conversation at that point. We were gonna talk about it because
that was totally fair.
So, I think it's interesting.
I will say, just to create a little more conversation and play a little devil's advocate here, I agree with you, and I agree also that it's very admirable that you take a stand. But consultant on a game like this, that doesn't – I mean, have you met – what's the military consultant? He's been working on all the Call of Duty games. Hank? Is that his first name?
Yeah, Hank's involved again. He's involved, and this other guy is Peter –
They have a couple people who are inputting on these things, but inputting means, you know, they talk to him for, I think, a couple of days.
Right.
They don't.
The point
sound
is
like
a paycheck.
The point is the paycheck fact that they don't need those guys to make this game.
That's true.
They would disagree with you because
of their marketing thing, right?
Dude, you know what? I mean, here's the problem: is I think that if you have something to be upset about, it's that they used him. I wish I had seen the commercial. So evidently, they used Oliver North in their television campaign.
I saw the spot where he talked. Yeah,
a series of five ads,
and that's kind of dumb. Yeah. The thing that they used him for in game terms is that this guy actually was. So the game takes place in the 80s during the beginning, and it directly involves the events that took place in Afghanistan, and this dude was there.
Right.
So they wanted to recreate those scenes, and the person to ask is this guy because he was there.
My only point is they could have chosen a number of other people. The reason they chose him was because it's Oliver North and people like me.
I don't think
that
they could have chosen.
Recognize.
They couldn't have chosen anybody else who was there making those weapons deals. Well, he was the guy who made them.
No, but he's not the only one that knows about the nefariousness that was going on.
But if you want to talk to someone and say, Jeff, so tell me about what it was like when you sat down with the leader of the Taliban to sell him those Stinger missiles.
Yeah.
There's only one guy that can answer that question.
But I'm not going to hire, you know. Yeah.
You're not going to hire Saddam Hussein scene.
Even if he is the best expert, though, that doesn't mean that you should, you know, that you should give him that paycheck, that you should support that.
Yeah. And I,
that guy. I mean, even if he is the best guy, it doesn't, you know, he's a convicted felon. So
we don't have to have the political argument over it. I think it's a fair point. And it's whether you agree or disagree with the stand you're taking, I think you can respect it.
I'm not trying to, you know, harsh anybody's shit or anything like that.
Harsh our mellow.
And I don't normally, this isn't a thing that I've, I'm sure I've avoided a game in the past for some reason, but I can't think of one. This is like actually the first time where I was like, you know what? I don't think I can, just for me personally.
I wonder though, how many times have authors gone and used serial killers as, you know, reference points if they're writing a horror story or, you know,
it's different.
Paid them?
Yeah, that's different.
Yeah.
I don't think they have. Also, guys,
is it different?
Well, you know, you hear a lot of stories about what's that crazy chick that found out? We just found out that her ABC News paid her legal bills and she got off. Doesn't matter.
What?
The point is,
it's Nuketown. Just kidding. Go ahead.
The point is, I think that holding someone accountable for that stuff, like Jeff is doing, is putting his money where his mouth is.
Absolutely.
You know, I think it's admirable and it's worth bringing up. So people can make their own decisions about it, but
it's going to be very interesting because another thing that's happened is if you're under 30, you probably don't know who Oliver North is.
Yeah.
Right.
I've actually asked this question to a lot of people and they're like, why were you disgusted by Oliver North being there? I'm like, because he was the guy who was committing basically foreign policy without any
treason.
Yeah, it was treason. And yeah, it's war crimes. It's it's basically war crimes.
He was selling American weapon systems to other countries' governments without authorization from anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
frightening to think that he may have had authorization from people. But anyway, it's an interesting
not from Congress.
Here's another way of framing it. We can say that I love the fact that maybe this discussion will engender some people to read their history, you know, and learn about this
a little
bit.
You should definitely know about that.
Yeah. So hopefully that's – but it's – I also take issue with the sense that it would be great if I really believed that this game was going to deal with any of that in a realistic way that would justify needing to know those things. You know, like that if I actually felt that playing COD – Blops 2 was going to give me an insight into the Cold War, I'd be excited.
Right.
But I don't
– No.
I don't feel like it will. I think we're in comic book town, as I said before, and that's an okay, fun, escapist thing. I certainly love escapist entertainment, but I'm I've always loved those old Call of Duty games, 1 and 2, where I was like, oh, wow, I really feel like I have a more in touch with my grandfather's generation mm-hmm. in a lot of ways mm-hmm. because I'm learning about what it must have been like to be during World War II, you know. Anyway.
No. Also, right. guys, there are girls in this game.
Wait,
there are girls
boobs?
In this game?
Oh, never
That's
mind.
Right.
I take it all back.
Yeah.
Do they have boobs?
There are ladies. Does that matter? Because it's funny because before this trailer dropped, I was talking with someone else about, you know, another gamer guy, and we were joking. We were like, it's Call of Duty. What are they going to do new in there? What are they going to put girls in? And sure enough, they were talking this week. They're like, we've got girls in the game. Like, yeah. Does that matter? Is that something that they can put as a bullet point on there?
Gears of War 3 felt so
I mean, it did, yeah, yeah. But...
It mattered to Kratos. Kratos loves the ladies. If you stick around when we come back on the other side, we will see what Kratos is up to or not up to, because he might not even be in God of War Ascension. Jeff will tell us about that when we come back on the other side. So as Jeff Cannata predicted accurately 7 years ago, the fourth game in the God of War series is not God of War 4. It's God of War Ascension. And it debuted, which Jeff saw, and you did not get to play, though, right?
No.
But they played it in front of you.
They did. It was a live demo.
Multiplayer.
4v4.
I keep confusing this week God of War with PlayStation Battle Royale. Like I have them like
that,
in
that
my head as the same game because there's like multiple people fighting each other. But no, what you're not playing as Kratos. You're playing as some random dude, right?
Correct.
Or a girl.
Yes. No, women. In fact, there's an interesting note. There are no women. Well, I'm sure a lot could change before the game comes out, but there are no women currently in multiplayer as playable characters because, according to Todd Pappy, the game director, female models look like everything's built on Kratos' rig. And the females don't look like very, very so good on the
Kratos' boobs.
Yeah, not so much.
Never.
So,
what, you don't like a battle maiden?
Yeah.
No, but a battle maiden that looks like Kratos in a dress. Although he wears a dress, basically. But
I think I've seen Arnold Schwarzenegger play that role.
I think you have. It looks really good from what they showed. I mean, basically, the demo was sort of a tease. Like, they, you know, opened it up and it looks like a single player and he's taken out a Cyclops. And then another character comes on and you're like, okay, co-op? Oh, wow, co-op. And then apparently all that was just a big tease because then they go into the arena and it's two teams of four in this huge arena. I'm sure you guys have seen screens or videos at this point. Big Cyclops in the background. And it's sort of it was a domination mode called Execution, I believe, where a couple control points players are vying over. And once those two control points are sort of controlled. Yes.
Dominated.
For lack of a better word. Yes. Then it triggers some sort of end boss battle with the huge Cyclops that's like, so you're taking them out as a team. Yeah.
Does only one team get to go to the final confrontation?
That is what it looked like in the demo.
Okay. Which is fine. I mean, the other team can just drop out and go back to matchmaking and take another shot.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not. It was four players that were taking down the Cyclops simultaneously. So one of the teams. They do have a cool class system in there. So, you know, when you pick a character to play, or I don't know, you pick a character, you pick a dude. You align your character with one of four gods from, you know, the series. So basically, it's sort of like a kit. Like outfitting your character with a kit. So depending on who you align yourself with, you'll get special bonuses and weapon and different weapons and stuff like that. So it's all sort of you know.
But I think that's cool. I mean, you can align with Hades or Zeus or Ares or Poseidon, and you can imagine how those can kind of line out into different sorts of powers and abilities and weaponry, and especially if you play God of War. I mean, remember, like each of those gods, you got different weapons from them, but they didn't say anything about chain blades.
No, the chain blades are in there, but they are, well, okay, as a weapon, as a primary weapon, they're still trying to figure out if they'll make it into multiplayer. Uh-huh. Because just because of the nature of them, you know, you spin them around and you can take out a whole bunch of dudes. It's got to be pretty interesting to try to manage that. However, they are in there already, or were in the demo, as sort of a combo. So like if you knock a guy up in the air with your sword, your other teammate could shoot out a chain blade and grab him and pull him down. And so you're chaining these things together, but it's mid combo. It's not like its own weapon sort of thing. So it's in there. There's no Kratos because, you know, they didn't want to have everyone either fighting over Kratos or now there's Kratos is going to be in the single player.
I was going to say
there is a single player component.
Addendum to the multiplayer, right?
The single player component is a prequel to the series and they didn't talk about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but Mike, I don't think they're treating it as an addendum. I mean, they said that I think Pappy said something like, we know it's our bread and butter and we have to get that right. We wanted to show you multiplayer because it's different.
Oh, okay. Because I've been hearing about this game and I'm like, is this a full retail game? Like,
No. I think the deal was...
It does not sound like... I mean, it sounds fun and sounds cool, but it doesn't sound like a meaty experience. No. It sounds like an add-on.
This was basically like, you guys know God of War is going to be awesome. We never fuck it up. Here's some multiplayer that nobody's ever seen.
Because the game's like 2013, right?
Yeah. They don't even have a projected...
I don't think it's fall.
Okay.
Because actually, I said something about that when I did the Daily Show, and I looked into it, and it doesn't look like it's 2012. So
yeah, it's still... I mean, they were talking about still deciding about modes, and like, you know, people were throwing out ideas, like, you know, King of the Hill with Kratos.
And if you think about it, from the stuff we've seen when you demo games, demoing a single-player game means building a slice. Right.
When you have to, right.
And in multiplayer, you're building up levels and frameworks, and you can just go, you can kind of say, oh, here's a battle arena we fixed up and we can show somebody.
Well, and that's the thing about God of War in general is that, and this is since the beginning, like since the original, you know, PlayStation title, since the whole thing first started, PlayStation 2 or wherever it started. But the whole point of it is, it's that action sensibility of like you against the world. How well can you pull off these combos? Like that's the core of the game. Is you're given five enemies and you see how well you can fight those five enemies. And you're given 10 enemies, you see how well you can fight those 10 enemies. So I'm interested to see, did they bring that at all over to, there are combos like you said in the multiplayer, but right. how did they bring that sort of experience, that core God of War be better at making combos experience into the multiplayer? Is that included at all?
You know,
do you have like a multiplier?
Not that I saw. Yeah. I mean, there was no on-screen HUD or anything like that. It was just like, I mean, like I'm sure there will be one.
They build it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's tough to tell if that sort of, I mean, they are talking about having those hit pauses and stuff like that that makes it feel like God of War combat.
Yeah.
We're all worked in there. But most of what was on screen, like it was 4v4 match, but then it was usually what was on screen was 2v2, and sometimes a third person would come in or a fourth, and sometimes it was 4v4.
So adapts maybe based off the player who's playing?
Well, the demo was focused on one character.
Right. So what I'm saying is that's kind of giving the implication that you would see whatever part of, like, instead of it being a Smash Brothers type of thing where you're PlayStation All-Stars where you see the whole arena, you'd see arena based off of you.
Yeah, the arena's big enough that you can actually move away from
it. I mean, that's
Jeff, I'm curious.
Go ahead.
As your response to Call of Duty for multiplayer and single player, how do you see God of War? You like God of War.
Yeah.
And I'm presuming that you like God of War in a similar vein to why you like Call of Duty. It's fun, sit down, play it. It's a great, fun experience, and then you're done with it. Well, what about multiplayer here?
I think that this is a potentially very exciting addition to the game because I think they have a niche that isn't really done in multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think like Mike was kind of referencing that if they figure out a way to give you that God of War experience in multiplayer and have it be a additive, I'm not just, hey, I'm in my little corner doing my God of War stuff and you're in your little corner doing your God of War stuff. But if we can team up in interesting ways, if figure out a way to make it, to add real team play in that formula with that, you know, third person action God of War mechanic, I think that's really something different. I think that's really something exciting.
And well, that's the thing about God of War. You could button mash your way through God of War, but you're not going to do nearly
as
well.
At lower levels.
Huh?
At lower
levels.
Well, yeah, yeah. But you turn that sucker up and it gets brutal.
And what I'm saying is you're not going to do nearly as well as you start to figure out, oh, if I time this exactly right, if I hit this thing right, if I dodge at the exactly right time, if I pull up that shield at the right time, it does a counter. Like, you there's a lot of complexity to the combat. And if they can go into multiplayer and make it so that it's not just two Kratoses, and not obviously they're not Kratos, but two God of War, two Kratai jumping in and like beating the crap out of each other, but it's actually like a fighting game almost kind of thing where you have to do combos, and like it's a sort of a test of skill over who can do combos better. That's a really fascinating take on multiplayer and how it all works. So I'm interested to see how that works out.
It struck me as very much timing based.
And I mean,
looking at what the opponent, where your opponent is, and where you know.
Well, that's intriguing, and that's what the core God of War game, I think, is about, except that you're facing off against harpies and all these other AI-controlled creatures. But if you can face off against someone else, and you each have different skill sets, but, you know, if you can land your combos better than he can land his combos, you win. That's an intriguing multiplayer possibility.
I was super skeptical going in. I'm actually pretty excited about it.
I hope we get to see more of it at E3.
Well, I'm sure we will.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I hope that there's something more to it.
No, I mean, they
showed this before E3, so I don't know. Anyway, everything's more fun when you play it together, including board games.
Whoa. You said you weren't even going to talk about that. I'm so happy.
I feel like we need a theme song of some kind in here.
I do that just
for you. You're the master of the Segway!
There you go. There. That's what I was
like.
Thank you.
Well, I had to bring it up because you're on the hook now. Mr. Pusher.
This is your mea culpa, right? This is your...
Mr. Pusher.
First one's free.
You were so skeptical.
Yeah, but look, you know, like, I don't have, like, the largest number of people that I do stuff with in Los Angeles, and you are now on the hook for regular board gaming.
This is my dream come true.
Amy is on the hook for barbecue and crescent roll thing of deliciousness that I am, like, salivating over just thinking about.
Good food is definitely part of the formula for board gaming.
And fired up.
And we got fired up.
This having been said, you threw Formula D at me.
Well, I knew you're a racing fan.
It's awesome.
So we had board game day. If you guys are following us on Twitter, you saw us tweeting about it. We finally did it.
Yep.
And
I want more.
I thought that was a good first game for you to be introduced to.
So here's the problem I have is not only do I really so I want more already right away. And I want to play more because that was really fun. And definitely part of the fun is that you have your friends around, and it's a great thing to do, and it's very communal, and that's fun. But I'm concerned that, at least for the next few times, I'm really going to want to play more Formula D, too. Well, I really liked that game. And you have a whole wall full of – I mean, you guys, you should see Jeff's shelving units full of board games.
It's kind of taking over the house.
It's amazing.
But I appreciate that. But
I want to play more Formula D specifically.
Well, we had an amazing game of Formula D because, first of all, you stalled to start.
I did.
So you had a bad start right off the line. I mean, this is a Formula racing game, so it's basically we're just doing a one-lap race.
Both of them failed right off.
Yeah, you're rolling dice. But you still managed to score be second place.
Yep.
And James Stevenson, who was there, he won. He was masterful around some of those turns. But we had like a crash right in the last lap. Ariel crashed.
She had one number. So we're coming into the last, and we were running the Monaco circuit, and we're coming into the last corner. And Ariel has like she needs to keep the gear. So the way the game works is that it replicates a gearbox by dice, and as you step up through the gearbox, you roll dice that have progressively larger number ranges on them. So when you're in first gear, you roll a dice that only has ones and twos, whereas when you're in sixth gear, you're rolling something that's like 20-something to 30-something, so you can really go fast. And to balance that out, when you get into the corners, each corner zone has a prescribed number of stops that you have to land inside the corner to replicate the amount of slowdown that you'd have to do to break through the zone. So combine the two, and you really do wind up in that same sort of driving basics of fast driving, of braking, adjusting your gears, because you want to come out the other side of the turn, moving into higher gears, not having had to brake late, because if you had to brake late, now you're only rolling low dice, and you're coming out onto the straight part.
I'm gonna interrupt you, and I'm gonna use this term, and this is probably not the right term, and it probably will throw a lot of people off. But what just happened right there was given your experience with board games, was cute. because you are like diving in on this game and thinking that these mechanics, like these are built into this game. This is what board games are. Like there are mechanics, well, like there, and like,
I see games, that like, there was no shortage of flakes this morning.
Yeah, clearly. I think should be encouraging because he's Mr. Poopy Pants about board games, and the fact that he has this much enthusiasm, I'm thrilled over here.
But no, I know I'm just excited that you are like so thrilled about the mechanics of this one specific board game.
Yeah, I want to play the hardcore version too.
Right, well, every game is like deep mechanics built into them.
Sure, but it does a really unique job of being able to accurately model how a real race plays out.
Yeah, this clicked for me because I love driving and it fit the driving theory.
How new are you? Have you played Settlers?
No.
Settlers on...
Of Catan.
No. I played Settlers on PC.
Ramping him up. We did also play Seven Wonders after that, so we can get to that in a second. But I think the real exciting thing was how that... Our race, we had what? Seven people playing? Yeah, seven people playing.
Yeah.
And Formula really D is cool. A great game in the sense that it can ramp up to 10 players at once. We had a crash in the last turn, as you were about to say.
Yep.
Ariel had one of a 20-sided die?
No, it was a much smaller. It was the 8 die. It was the right. It was the red one. She was like in third gear, right. And then there was like one number. She could only not roll an 8, and she rolled an 8.
Yeah. And so it was this really
and wrecked in the last
dramatic moment.
I'm excited for you, and I'm almost envious because you have this world in front of you of these incredible games, and you're only dipping your toe. Like you're so excited about this Formula D, but you're dipping your toe into
it's
the
pretty exciting. And then we also had a photo finish at the end for last place between myself and my mom. Let's be honest, my mom was there.
Aww. And who won? Who won?
I did.
But who won Seven Wonders?
Oh, who did win Seven Wonders? My mom won Seven Wonders.
Your mom did.
My mom won Seven Wonders.
She beat us all.
Now, that was the one. I knew Formula D was going to be a hit. Seven Wonders was the one where I was like, is Garnet going to be along on this ride? I know you play Civilization. It's a civ-building game, and it plays very quick. It's really a very fast. Everybody's doing their actions at the same time, which is great.
So I'm not... I don't need to play Seven Wonders again next time. I could play something. I could play Formula D and something else again next
time.
Okay. So right. I liked Seven Wonders, but here's where we'll diverge a little bit, is that I enjoyed what I thought was the framework of it being like a Civ game because I love Civilization, but I much prefer Civilization games because in order to make this work in a board game sensibility, I felt like very quickly I realized that, what I'm really trying to do here is figure out how to mathematically work a bunch of different systems to rack up score points to get the most score so I win.
Well, and it really wasn't. Board games.
I was going to say, that's pretty common.
And so it wasn't really so much about, I should make stone and pottery and papyrus. It was about, do I want to do those things or do I want to invest in military? Because I've already got some military going
on. But
that's
how you play Civilization too, right? When you play the Sid Meier's version?
Yes.
You decide what you're going to specialize in, what can maximize your...
And technically, I mean, games in general, I've heard them defined before as a series of interesting decisions. And that's all games. Like, you whatever game you're playing...
I believe that was Sid who made that.
Oh, there you go.
That decision.
Who said that?
And the more decisions... I believe the more decisions, the more fun. I think that the more meaty the decision...
Don't get me wrong. It was still very fun. As the person who came in second in both
You got to play Settlers. That's like the
board Settlers game. Of Catan.
You got to play Settlers of Catan. And then the other one that I would recommend, and I'm saying this to your audience as much as you guys, but if you haven't played Dominion, have you played Dominion?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that was
she said, it's like, of course.
I mean, I don't. No, but we're all being very condescending, and we shouldn't.
Well,
be.
That's like me saying, have you played Call of Duty? Have you ever?
Dude, it wasn't
Call of Duty?
It wasn't like, condescending, like, Jeff. Like it totally most... wasn't condescending. It was more like this. Is like you're such a board game guy. You were like, of course I've played.
Well, the only reason that we didn't play Dominion, that was really my plan, was to go Formula D Dominion for him. But we didn't play it because he doesn't support the number of people we have hand. But it's an excellent game. The sort of Mount Rushmore, I think, of modern.
Obviously, you need to invest
games.
In some more hardware because if you can't support more multiplayer, you need better.
You didn't have enough controllers.
Yeah. Well, I think it's Settlers, Carcassonne, Dominion, and Ticket to Ride are sort of my little Mount Rushmore.
Ticket to Ride. What's the other one that Days of Wonder makes? I just played it for the first time. Small World. Is another really great game.
I don't like that game.
You know,
I own
it.
I own it, but I don't like it.
I thought it was fun. But yes, I agree. All of those games you mentioned in terms of the Mount Rushmore type thing,
yeah,
you got to play them. Because this is where this type of stuff comes from. Because these games were being, like, obviously levels and hit points and all that stuff comes from D&D. Like, in all the video games that we talk about where there are levels and hit points, that comes from D&D. And Gary Gygax has even said, like, we decided that if a guy gets stronger, he has the strength of 2 men. So that would make you level 2. If a guy gets even stronger, he has the strength of 3 men. So that makes you level 3. So that's where experience points comes from, is D&D.
Oh, holy shit, that's old school.
But in terms of rolling dice, and in terms of like movement around a board and moving around a game world and like those types of decisions, that's board games. That's where that stuff's come from. Like making those types of, not like you said, I want to do wood, sheep, or... It's not that. It's what will give me the most score points to end the game with. So
you had fun. Why? Because it was social, right?
So, and I would say a couple things. Other things I want to talk about before we get done, and we're good. Getting close to the end of the show. But yes, I had fun because it was social. And one thing that really stood out to me is that I really want to play more of it, and I also really want to pay attention from a design standpoint to the social interaction and communal parts of it. Because I think that that's one of the biggest places that video games, especially multiplayer online games, really need to improve. And I think there's so much they could learn. Just like sitting there soaking up that experience, there's still so much that could be drawn from and learned from in design theory that could be reapplied to video game design that is just – it's. I think there's still a world out there that could be improved on.
This goes right back to the beginning of what we were talking about like 3 hours ago, whenever the show started.
It was hours and hours ago.
Which is, you know, so much of massively multiplayer games just depends on hit points. Keeping everybody up, taking the boss hit points down. And there's so many more places where video games can go to build that type of social interaction that do not include, I need to heal you, you need to attack the boss, you need to do that.
So. I buy into that 100%, build the social interaction. Okay, one of the things I want to make sure we talked about for a minute, and we can carry this over to next week if we want to, is this whole idea of Microsoft selling Xboxes with a subscription plan like a cell phone.
I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
So
the idea, folks,
if you said Microsoft selling Xbox with a subscription plan, I'd be like, that's stupid. But then if you told me it's... $99,
yeah,
and then $15 a month, and it includes Xbox Live.
Yep.
Then I'd be like, oh, okay, sure.
Yeah. So
no, I know.
It's like the way, and Americans are really trained to buying cell phones this way. And I understand if you're listening to us internationally, and you're not aware of the way Americans buy cell phones, it might not sound so familiar. But this is, everybody in America buys their cell phones in the subsidy model,
and we also wear trucker hats and eat burgers.
Yeehaw! Well,
those two things are not true, but really, almost all of us do buy our phones like this. We don't buy phones out of contract and unlocked. We buy our iPhones for $99 or $199 with a 2-year commitment to the carrier of your choice and a qualifying plan. So now Microsoft, and I'm surprised it actually took this long considering they have a subscription service, they say, we're going to sell you a 4 GB Xbox 360 with Kinect and 2 years of Live. It's $99 for the hardware, and then it's $15 a month, and you'll have Xbox Live. And they said also there might be some streaming video with that.
You also get
warranty coverage for your Xbox and Kinect the whole period. So you got 2 years of warranty coverage on that hardware.
What if the next gen of consoles goes down this pathway? What if the solution to barrier of entry of $400 box is...
And getting everybody on gold.
And getting everybody... And having a more expensive subscription, so you're paying more over a longer period of time. I think Sony could do this too, you know?
Well, PlayStation Plus is already... testing those waters.
Well, and the survey. So Sony sent around a survey that asked PlayStation Plus subscribers how they would value a membership in Elite as part of their PlayStation Plus. Would that be a valuable thing to you? Mm. Would you appreciate that? I think that's pretty specific.
Call of Duty Elite, you mean?
Yeah. So you get Call of Duty Elite if you're a PS Plus subscriber.
The other thing, and I haven't seen anybody else draw this connection, and I didn't even do it, so it's my fault. But the other thing that Microsoft did this week was they closed down Inside Xbox, Nelson's show.
I cannot freaking believe they did that.
Shut that down. But my thinking is they're not making that show. My thinking is they are going to go into other outlets. They're going to just start using cable channels to promote their
they're
going to use other people's content and bring that in through their subscription
service. Other people's content exactly so I think they
can use my content.
They made the decision as a corporate
you want to sell them to your content
I'd be happy to
as a corporate entity that doesn't always understand these things. Someone said, hey, you know what, content generation is not our specialty, so we're going to get out of that. Rather than saying, oh, there's so many great and cool things we could do with this if we did it right, they just said, oh, we'll do other things better. We don't need to mess with this, baffling.
You know, let's have that $15. Maybe Microsoft cuts a deal with Netflix that includes Netflix.
Yeah.
Maybe they cut a deal with Hulu that includes a lower version of Hulu, like a trial of Hulu.
So it sounds like we're all sort of supportive of this.
Lower version.
Sounds like we're all supportive of it.
Yeah, I think it's, well, it's good for the consumer, right? And
I think ultimately it is, because although it's about $30 or $40 more expensive at the end of the 2 years, you didn't have to fork it all out at once, which means that you're only having to incur the monthly charge. And if you're good with, I mean, an investment banker would probably tell you, well, by the way, if you took the same amount of money and invested the differential, you'd probably be able to make more than it would cost you because you had that money in your pocket for all the time.
Well, so here's the thing too. I just did the math. $15 a month for 2 years is $360.
Yeah.
Plus the $99 that you paid. I mean, that's
so it's $469. It's $460 versus $420.
I think I paid $499 for my Xbox when it first released or whatever it was. So.
Right, or $60 twice, which is $120 plus $400 for the Xbox. Yeah. So it'd be or Xbox plus Kinect.
Plus, when Microsoft makes these deals, maybe you get MLB for part of that. Maybe you get NBA for part of that. Maybe you get Netflix for part of
that. But also, I guarantee you, your subscriber base, your install base, is vastly larger than you would selling a $400 box.
Right. It's basically 100%. Yes. All right, folks, we have reached the... Man, there's still so much stuff on this punch list. We will come back to some of this other stuff next week, if we can.
Some punches.
It's the race up to E3, folks. There's just too much to talk about, but we are at the end, which means it's time for finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
Jeff Mattis, you get to finish us off first.
Alrighty, I'm going to give a little indie love to a little game I've been playing recently called Offspring Fling by Kyle Pulver, and it is a puzzle platformer where
you got to keep them separated.
Yeah, not that offspring. where basically you play a little fat mama creature that's like a little, looks kind of like a Pokemon or a Pikachu, and it's got all these little babies all around the level, and the puzzle part of the platforming involves picking up your babies and throwing them at stuff and putting them on switches. And it's cute. It's retro. It's fun. I think it's like $8. Don't quote me on that, but it's worth checking out.
Mike Schramm.
I want to give a shout out again to Tribes Ascend. I am Toucan Samurai in Tribes if you want to come play with me this weekend. And then the other thing is...
I love that name, Toucan Samurai.
Yeah, that's my gamer tag. I want to shout out Junk Jack, which is an iOS game. I recently flew back from Europe. It was like a 12-hour flight. The entire flight I played Junk Jack. It is an amazing little game. It just got a gigantic update for iOS. I think it's like $3. It's very Minecraft-esque. It's sort of like Terraria. It's a 2D crafting game. Just brilliant. It's just an incredible game, and you should definitely check it out if you have not played it.
Awesome. Jeff Cannata.
I'm going to continue the mobile love, but this is going to be for the PS Vita, lest we forget it. I've been playing Mortal Kombat on the PS Vita. It's a great port of a great game that... You know, the recent reboot of the Mortal Kombat franchise, which has, I think, still the best story mode ever in a fighting game. And they do a great job on the Vita, and I really like playing it on this device. Fighting games on a portable system seem to really work well for me. It seems like a game that I can just pick up and play a little bit of. And it really drives home the fact that I think the Vita's D-pad is excellent. I really like how it feels. I like how responsive the D-pad is. I don't play it with the nubbin. I play it with the D-pad, and I really like the functionality on that device. I highly recommend it if you're into Mortal Kombat and you have a Vita.
Wow. That's a pretty damn ringing endorsement.
It's very good. I mean, it's a great game, and they did a great port.
Awesome. I have got to say, that of all this stuff that I'm looking at here, Company of Heroes 2 has me so freaking excited. Now, evidently, according to a couple of Twitter followers, if I had been paying closer attention, I guess they were going to announce it at Gamescom last year, but pulled out at the last minute. But come on, Company of Heroes 2, Russian Front. I remember sitting like many a time on the eighth floor back in the Ziff Davis days, watching Sean Elliott play this game and being so fucking envious of his ability to master the game. And I knew that because part of it is you do have to spend some time. If you've never played Company of Heroes, though, it was widely credited as the game that really breathed life back into real-time strategy. And what Relic has done since then is always built on that same model. And you know, while the Warhammer stuff is cool, the Dawn of War stuff, which is the Warhammer stuff that I'm speaking about, because there's so much Warhammer, I don't want you to get distracted. But the Company of Heroes is amazing, and the idea of a new game coming out, I'm stoked. I'm super stoked for that.
Relic knows they know what they're doing.
Oh, Relic, masterful. I mean, I would still be, as a long, long, long time PC gaming player, especially real-time strategies, I'd really, really like to see Homeworld, but I understand that Homeworld is a little more nerdy and a little, like the whole 3D maneuvering in space thing always put people off, but like... this is awesome news. This is awesome news.
Relic, one of the most underrated developers out there. I think for what they've done, they don't get quite as appreciated as they should.
Oh, yeah. They should definitely appreciate
it. If you are excited about Company of Heroes and you like board games, check out Memoir 44.
Hey-o.
Or we could play it.
We could play it.
Or we could just play it. There you go, folks. That's your big show this week. Thanks very much to our special guest, Mike Schramm, who will definitely be back because he obviously gets the show.
Thank you very much.
Where would we look for you? What would you like to
follow me on Twitter? I'm at Mike Schramm, which is Mike, S-C-H-R-A-M-M. I have my own site, MikeSchramm.com. And, of course, I write every single day on TUAW, which is the unofficial Apple weblog, and Joystick.com, which is, of course, J-O-I-S-T-I-Q.
All right. You know where to catch up, of course, with Jeff Mattis, ShackNews.com, Indie Games Channel, or right here on The Big Show. And Jeff Cannata, great show coming up. Great shows coming up every day this week on Totally Rad Show.
Yeah, last week we had our big Avengers review, which was fun.
I have my ticket.
Yeah.
I have my ticket.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to you about it.
Going on Sunday.
So you guys going to have like Ice Trucker show up in the studio now? And,
yeah, we have been.
The Mythbusters.
Evidently have been acquired by Discovery. So that just broke. Right before we recorded.
I want to see the Deadliest Catch episode.
Ooh.
Ice yeah. Road Rad Show.
Yeah. I believe every show on the Totally Rad Show now has to have an orangutan. Oh. So that's helpful.
That's in the contract.
Good. All right, folks. That is all. As always, big thanks to the booth and everybody here at Atlantis Group for hosting the show week in and week out here in lovely Santa Monica. We're going to go out and hit it right now. That is your weekend confirmed, and we are Ghost. That you know we play harder. Work so hard. Don't you know we play harder? Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hear me with another round. I gotta feel she's ready. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.